Live on DAZN Worldwide, May 2nd and 3rd, Garcia versus Romero and Canelo versus Skull. Friday from 6 p.m. Eastern, Garcia returns in a history-making Times Square takeover. 24 hours later, Saturday from 7 p.m. Eastern, King Canelo faces undefeated Skull for the undisputed crown. May 2nd and 3rd, a knockout weekend of boxing. Pick one or go all in for only $90, exclusively on DAZN. Buy now at DAZN.com/boxing.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by Smart Travel, a new podcast from NerdWallet. Smart Travel doesn't just cover points and miles. They break down all the financial aspects of your trip, whether that's the best days to book, how to avoid hidden fees, or which fancy travel credit cards pay off, and which ones are just an expensive flex. If you want your travel budget to work harder, then dive into the best deals, products, services, and more with Smart Travel from NerdWallet, wherever you get your podcasts.
Hate doing cardio? Try brushing and flossing your teeth. I'm not talking about building up a sweat. I'm talking about building a healthier mouth for a healthier heart, for a healthier you. Smile Generation trusted dentists look at your care through the lens of the mouth-body connection, because what happens in the mouth plays a critical role for the rest of your body. To find a dentist near you committed to treating all of you, visit smilegeneration.com/confidence today and live longer, healthier, and happier with Confidence Unleashed.
Can't get enough of the Fan in the Morning?
Shown up.
Because this is nothing like that.
Working.
Al and Jerry are here with stories they'd never get to cover on the morning show.
Very sexy robot.
Hey, look at that pig.
Shenanigans.
Naked yoga.
My mother had a bad experience with these goats.
Let's hump the fence.
It's Al and Jerry's post-game podcast.
All right, away we go. Podcast time on another glorious Wednesday. Al, what is on your freaking mind?
Oh, hi there, Jerry. I noticed before when I came into the studio, you were admiring my sneakers.
Yeah, very nice. I like the color scheme. They look nice.
So I will tell you this. These are my old sneakers. But what I did was I was getting tired of tying my shoelaces.
Okay.
First of all, when I told Gina this, when I said, I got an Amazon delivery. I go, those are my new the shoelaces, but you don't have to tie them. She goes, this is what it's come to for you. You now don't want to tie shoelaces. I go, that's correct.
I'm not familiar with no tie shoelaces.
Yeah. I don't know where. I was getting sick of tying my sneakers for whatever reason. When I tie my sneakers, if I don't double knot them as I'm walking, they just become untied.
So I double knot mine. I don't think mine have come undone, and I just slip my feet in and out of them.
Yeah. So I wasn't able to do that.
Okay.
And every time I have to take the dog out, I'm like, I'm double tying this. It was just annoying.
Right.
So I just went into Amazon. I typed in no tie shoelaces, and all these things came up. So I picked one that was sold the most and had the best reviews.
How do they work? Explain that to me.
So I'll show you. So the company, this is not an ad, Jerry, but this is, it's called Lock Laces.
Okay.
So they're like a rubber band. They're like a rubbery tension thing. You loop them all the way through your shoelaces, and then there's a lock. They get locked in, and then they're just...
And they're done.
And they're done.
Wow.
And then they're flexible to take on and off, but fit snug.
That's kind of goes almost like bungee.
Yeah. Well, yes, exactly.
Oh, that's cool.
It's like bungee.
What a neat concept.
There's a bunch of different brands. I tried this Lock Laces.
Okay.
It was like $7.99 for a color. Fits perfect.
What a great... And you look like you're wearing new sneakers.
Yeah, they look like new sneakers. So I got, I have these blue sneakers that have some orange in them. So
right.
I got orange laces. Really stand out.
That is very cool.
But yeah, so I'd recommend them. The other thing that got me to buy it on Amazon, it said, you know, I don't
how
know
much
if
the tariffs were.
It did not. No tariffs. Although I'd have to look to
Who
see
knows?
If this is an American company. But it had it has a thing on it. When you go to the reviews, AI takes all the reviews and it gives you a review. It says the people seem to like the sturdiness of the product. Da, da, da. But it also has a thing on it that tells you whether the product is returned more often than not, less often than not. And it said this product has very few returns.
That means good product.
That means good product.
That's a very good product.
So I was like, you know, I'm going to take a shot at these
That's
lock
nice.
Laces.
And guess who's not
nice.
Returning them?
Not
you.
Returning them.
Look at that.
I'm looking around for other things. Like, then I went on their website this morning just to see if it was different than Amazon. Because I do have a pair of boots.
Right.
They have a size for your boot.
Very neat.
Yeah, really nice. Now, they do sell different colors, and it seems like, oh, maybe I would want different colors. I think once you put them on, they're not coming off.
Right.
You know
right,
what
right.
I mean? Like, I think you got to commit to a color.
Right. If you don't want to tie your shoes, the last thing you want to do is start threading these through every other day.
Right.
That's interesting.
So I have pick your color.
So like, I have my Rutgers sneakers.
Yeah.
I could get red.
You can get red.
That would look pretty cool.
And they have little white dashes in them, so it could be red and white. It would fit perfect for those.
Yeah, that would be neat.
Yeah.
Hmm. How about that?
Yeah, I was so thrilled. You know, because I always, anytime I purchase a product, I have buyer's remorse.
Yeah, It
never lives up to the hype.
What was the moment as I complimented you unknowingly?
Yeah.
On your sneakers. Was there a moment of, that's kind of cool?
Yeah. Right. I got it right there. Yeah.
See that?
I just got these in the mail yesterday, put them in, wore them today. I had no issues. No issues hooking them up.
Nice.
No issues buying them. Finally, no issues.
Very nice.
So I was thrilled. Yeah, I don't think they're going to.
No, I'm kidding. I'm joking.
I think they were just a solid product. I was really happy with it.
Very nice. You know, once in a while, it's nice to actually buy something
that
is what it says it is.
And it was like, it was $7.99.
Even better.
I mean, what a bargain.
Even better.
What a bargain.
Not bad.
But when you go there, even on Amazon, there are some millions of companies making these types of...
Well, it's the same old thing. Once someone develops something that's really good, you get copycats.
Yeah.
I mean, that's... We always talk Coke and Pepsi. You know, they're... Beer. I mean, there's a million different kinds of beer. I mean, some mills are a little bit, but I mean, Coors Light,
right.
Michelob Light, Miller Light, Michelob Ultra. I mean, it's just whatever.
They're all very similar, right?
They are very similar. Yeah. There's slight differences, but they're all similar.
Very similar. I was at a business yesterday. Gina's looking to purchase a fence, I believe, for like the perimeter of her property.
Okay.
A small fence.
Yeah.
But went in, she said, oh, there's a fence store I want to go to. Do you know the fence store still had up the giant plastic thing so you can't talk directly to the person?
You're kidding me.
No, they had the COVID plastic screen
up. Wow.
But meanwhile, under it's wide open, the side of it's wide open, and the top is like, oh, can you take this down?
You don't see that anywhere anymore.
Yeah.
How funny.
I was trying to figure out. I was like eyeballing it. It looked like they really had a... Based on their setup, it looked like maybe it was some work to put in, and they just never got around to
that could be.
Taking it down.
Especially if it's open all around.
It's open all around, but then people are...
Yeah, I don't know.
You're bending around the side to talk anyway.
I know.
Just take it down.
It's that was a different time.
That was like plexiglass, right?
Yes, all over.
Man, those plexiglass companies must have cleaned up in that moment.
The mask people.
The mask folks, yep.
I mean, the gaiters, which were nothing, and all of a sudden everybody had one.
Yeah.
And they were making them with different logos, and people were buying licenses to print. Like, I got a Cowboys one. I mean, yeah.
Right, the NFL teams had their own gaiters.
Oh, absolutely. It's funny because I get, you know, on the Google Photos, you'll get like, I got one that was, it said similar shots. Just like this memory, and it was about probably 15 or 16 different photos that I have taken in NFL stadiums. Usually when I get there and the stadium's empty, I will take a photo of it because I think it looks awesome with the field and there's no one in the building. And amongst those photos was the Cowboy-Giant game I did during the pandemic in December, and there were no fans allowed at MetLife Stadium, and it was the creepiest game I had ever done. It was just weird. And that was in them. And they think, wow, we went through a whole football season where there are no fans in most stadiums. I also did Cowboys Bengals that year in Cincinnati, which was one of the rare stadiums that allowed 12,500 fans. And it actually, even though the place was 60% empty, it still felt like a real game because there were real fans spaced out. But you saw it, and we're used to baseball stadiums with nobody in them. But it was just weird seeing that, you know?
Yeah, it's strange now because, like, to complete a documentary, it probably takes from the time people start filming a documentary to the time it gets to Netflix. It feels like that's like a 3-4 year period.
Could be.
And there's still so many documentaries coming out where the people are in masks. And it's just like, oh, this is like, I hate the reminder of it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's a harsh reminder.
Yeah.
There's no question about it. I mean, even when you go to the doctor and you know, you don't go nearly as much as I do. And they got to test you for, I'm going to test you for COVID. I'm like, oh my God, we're still doing that. Yes, we are. And that's a pretty good reminder too.
Yeah. Yeah, I just hate to see that in the documentaries now. Like, oh, sure, this is like, you know, I'm watching a 48 hours murder mystery and the wife's talking about how she definitely didn't kill the husband and she's wearing a mask in the police station. It's strange.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, it was.
We talked a lot today on the program about women not breaking up boxes, cardboard boxes. And then I was thinking about my time in drug fair, and you probably had this in Pathmark. Did you have the machine?
The baler?
Yeah, the baler.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Where you would put full cardboard boxes in, and then it would crush it.
Compacts them,
and then when the baler was full,
we had to tie it up with the wire.
Yeah.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. And then we would remove it onto the hand cart, and we'd go boil it outside.
Oh, well, that would be the worst when I would get to work, and I'm starting to do the box, and I see it's full. I'm like, oh.
Yeah, well, we had that. I didn't deal with that at Pathmark. So I worked overnights at Pathmark in the supermarket. I'd never dealt with that. But at the liquor store, that's where I did a lot of the compacting of the boxes.
Why didn't you have to compact boxes at Pathmark even in the overnight?
It was the people that worked in the back.
So you just threw the empty boxes back there. Somebody else was just crushing boxes.
It was not
boxes.
My responsibility. My U-boats were filled every night. I got in at 11 p.m., and I would see, wow, I got 9 U-boats to unload today. And there'd be some nights you go in there, you'd have one. I'm like, wow, we're not going to do much tonight. But as you were done, there was a guy that would go up and down the aisles because, you know, you would, like, say it was did I do the corn aisle? Yeah, I guess I did the canned vegetables aisle from time to time. So a lot of those would have plastic on top and then the cardboard carrier, and then you'd have the dozen cans. So a lot of cases you take your knife and you would cut the plastic around the cardboard, making sure not to go all the way through. You'd rip the plastic off, do the cans, you throw the box, move on. There was a guy that would go up and down the aisle. Like, that was his job, was to collect the boxes, bring them to the back, bail them. So I never had to really deal with that. At the liquor store, though, that was one where, kind of like you, there would be times I would come in for, let's say, a 4 to 10 shift, and I would walk in at 3:45, and they were doing inventory all day, and there'd be a million boxes sitting there, like no one did them. Like, and then you start doing it, you're like, oh, and I got to unload the goddamn thing. So I know exactly what you mean.
The baler, yeah, and it came with those wires that you would feed through the machine to wrap the baled thing.
Yeah, yeah, I remember.
Do you ever think, like, if you could go back and do one of those, work one of those places where you worked prior to your career?
Yes.
Right? So like a part-time job before you had a career. Mm-hmm. Where would you go back to
work? Probably the liquor store. I enjoyed that. I enjoyed the marketing part of it. I enjoyed...
Meaning what? Like the setup displays and things? Yeah, how to get people to buy particular products?
Like I felt like I enjoyed the seasons more. Kind of like I feel like teachers probably do. And even I feel like my wife has ever since she started working again. You know, at the liquor store, when spring was coming and baseball season was coming, Coors Light and Bud would come in with these big baseball props, and we'd have to have the area ready, and they would stack the things, and we'd put up all the baseball, and we'd hang the baseball signs, and that was really cool. And then for 4th of July, the store is red, white, and blue. And, you know, for when we would get towards Thanksgiving, now all of a sudden all the turkey stuff is coming in, and you're selling more wine because people are having turkey. And then once you got through Thanksgiving, quick turnover, now we're celebrating the Christmas season. And it was fun. Like, I enjoyed that part of it. And I also, it was neat seeing the new products. The one thing I've always told you that I didn't like about it was seeing the same people every day. Felt bad for them. That's the crappy part of that job. But I would say if I was going to go back and do one thing, and that would have been my career, I think trying to own a liquor store or a bar, probably a liquor store though, would have been it, would have been the choice.
Yeah, I think a bar is a more difficult business.
It is. It is.
To make money.
Oh, yeah. Well.
Or to consistently just to, because the bar, when I think about like bar food and things like that, now you're dealing with food and cooking. Yeah.
But when it's going well, it's going well.
With a liquor store, I feel like that could be fun.
Like I said, I've always found, I enjoyed those, I guess it was 4 years I did that, I want to say. Probably 4 years. That's probably it. Would you be, I don't know, where else did you work? I mean, drugstore?
Well, I do sometimes think about like, oh, when I retire, where would I maybe go work part-time? Mm-hmm.
To stay busy.
Yeah, I really enjoyed my time working in a hospital pharmacy.
Okay.
I might want to do that. That seems like kind of fun.
Would you have to go to pharmaceutical school?
No.
No, okay.
I just learned on the job.
No, but I'm saying now you might need something.
No, I don't think you need just to be a technician, no.
Oh, okay.
It's funny. I still know a lot of drug names mm-hmm. and their the generic name for it, because that's what we used to have to know all sure. those things. Sure. Well, we had a book we could look up, but I was really good at that. I could have kicked ass. I could have been a pharmacist. They would have made me go to pharmacy school, though.
That is true. But then you're running the place.
Yeah, but I feel like I could have like really been a pharmacist.
I'm sure you could have. Why not?
I don't know. Then they would have made, I would have had to, first of all, I would never have been able to get into Rutgers pharmacy school because I was a dope back then.
That would be a problem.
And then I would never have made it through like biochemistry and all the nonsense they put you through. But yeah, I worked there with all Rutgers pharmacy students. Mm. And then me, I wanted to be on the radio.
And you wanted to be Howard Stern.
Right.
That's yeah. pretty funny.
But it was a fun, I sometimes think about those, like what part-time fun jobs would be fun in retirement mm-hmm. time?
Yes, and I've thought of that many times as well.
Yeah.
But I still come back to I'd rather start a small little business.
Yeah, the problem is those jobs are all just hourly
yeah.
wages, which is tough to, they're all like just above minimum wage
sure.
or a little bit above minimum wage.
And if
wage.
I'm not going to make a lot, I'd rather at least run it.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't know. There's something about getting to a certain point in your life and not wanting to answer to anybody
yeah.
anymore. You've done it your whole life. As a kid, you're answering to your parents. Then you start working, you're answering to your boss until you're at an age like, you know, when you get to 60-ish or whenever you retire, you really want to go get a job where someone's going to theoretically could still send you home.
Especially like, if it's like a young person
right?
sending you home.
Are you kidding me?
Hey, old man.
No, thank
you're
you.
Late.
No, thanks.
Yeah.
Now, I think working at a golf course would be fun, but you still got to deal with the owner of the course or the GM or whoever's running the pro shop. Like, you're still at their, and I'm not saying I wouldn't do it. I might. I mean, I'm going to have to do something. I've told you that a million times. But I still would rather open some sort of small business, especially if you're not relying on that income.
Right.
You know, which I don't believe either one of us will be at. I think we're both in pretty good shape.
Well, let's get a liquor store then, Jerry, and we'll run a liquor store.
I would love to. The problem is the liquor license is probably upwards of $1 million.
Mm.
Now,
a fan would give us one?
Give us a liquor license. No, I do not believe that would be the case. But I would love to own a liquor store. I would. Even like my friend who owns Pool Ave Bar, and it's also a liquor store. So he's got the liquor store in the front, the bar's in the back, and they have a whole kitchen set up and everything. It's your neighborhood, you know, bar and grill or whatever, local bar. But like, when I go, I see him once in a while in the store, and he, as an owner, he will be there all day. That's his day. His day is Saturday. He runs the liquor store. He loves it. It's fun. You talk to people.
Yeah.
You know, you're kind of moving bottles around, trying to make the place look better. Like, what the hell? Why not?
The key is to find a thing that you can do that doesn't have, like, it's your own business that doesn't have a lot of overhead, right? Like, just to get started, right?
Sure. So that's now you're talking about in informational type business or like consulting where your overhead is you.
Yeah.
Your time is your overhead. Hard to do.
Yeah, very hard to do.
Not saying anything out there, but it's hard to do.
Like even this place that I bought these shoelaces from today, like that's clearly somebody's business.
Sure.
I'm a customer now.
Yep.
I spent $8.
Yeah.
I may not need them again for another 3 years.
They need to keep finding new customers.
Yeah.
Very difficult.
Very difficult.
Yes. Very difficult. And they hope that their customers like you have more shoes and maybe you will be a multiple purchaser. But it's not, that's a tough bit. When you have a product that you sell and that's your main income. So here's an interesting one. So, and I actually got to send this guy an email back. Guy sent me, Boomer and Geo, a new golf glove that he created.
Yes.
And
in fact, he emailed me to see if you guys have used them.
Yeah, well, I sent him an email that I was going to use it, and I have. I actually have the last few weeks, and I maybe when I'm done here, I'll remember to get it back to him. And his product is, instead of regular leather gloves, he uses goat leather. Goat skin leather
goat
or something,
leather.
Something like that.
Hell yeah.
But I got it. I'm like, oh, looks nice. But I'm like, why is it any different? And his point is it's a much tougher leather. It's not going to wear. And I will tell you, he's right. It does not wear nearly as much as the regular one. So I'm impressed by it. I think it's pretty good. The issue with it, though, to me, if I'm him, it's almost too good. Like the other ones, I get, they start wearing out on your finger within like a few months. You got to go buy another one. I've been wearing this thing for 3 months. It looks brand new still.
Like, right, so now you can't be a repeat customer.
I will be eventually, but not nearly as frequent as the other people have their customers. So it's almost like he created this great product, but he's almost going to be a victim of his own success.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, but it's interesting.
I like following local local people that have their own business on Instagram.
Sure.
Because I love to see how people build a business, how they think. So there's a woman who's got she makes sourdough bread.
Okay.
That's all sourdough bread.
That's her life.
Product. Yeah. And I got looking, like, she sells like a big sourdough bread for $12.
Okay.
How many does she have to sell to make a good living, I wonder, you know? And then how much work is that?
I don't know.
For that, like,
and I don't know if this is just someone out of her house doing it on the side. Does she have the proper licenses to do it? How much did that cost to get started?
Right. What's the overhead cost for that?
Yeah.
Equipment. I mean, all that stuff.
Nothing's cheap. Like when I remember when I started my LLC 7 years ago, I couldn't believe how much everything cost. I'm like, I'm just trying to, you know, for this and that. And it's like, you got to pay the state. You got to do this. You got to register. Now you got these taxes. You got like website calls. Like before I knew it, I was like $2,000. I'm like, what the hell? You know, a lot of stuff costs money, and I would think with that, you've got to have certain food licenses, I would think.
Yeah, how about this one? There's a guy down in Spring Lake, a Dutch Hill Farm meat shop.
Okay.
He's a veteran, and he is a butcher.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
So, he's hilarious on social media. Mm-hmm. Very, in-your-face type of guy, my kind of guy, Jerry.
Okay.
So anyway, he had some local sourdough bread makers selling their products in his store.
Like okay.
There was a shelf that he had. People would put their stuff there, and they would sell them. He did a post. Somebody turned him into the state of New Jersey. And I said, what? You're not allowed to sell? So I was so interested in this. So I looked. So if you're the sourdough maker, you may have a license to sell directly to the consumer. I can sell you my bread.
Right.
I can't put that bread in a store without a completely different license.
And I guarantee you that license costs a couple $1,000s.
Yeah, probably, yeah, at least, right?
There's nothing easy. And here's a guy trying to just help some local
business people.
Right. I know.
Think about someone turned him in.
And he probably gets fined for that.
Right.
That would not surprise me.
Like somebody walked in there and go, oh, really? Yeah. This guy's selling sourdough from somebody else? Wait till the authorities hear about this.
I certainly know about the authorities shutting people down, so. Happened to me.
When you were, Jerry, was a young entrepreneur trying to sell cigarettes out of the gas station working at.
Well, that too. Although I think that was more of an off-duty cop that saw that. I don't know that anybody reported me.
Oh, okay.
I believe a cop came in and was like, where's the license for this? I'm almost certain that's what happened.
And you didn't know. You just thought.
I had no idea.
You know what? I'm working here at this gas station late at night. People coming from the
clubs. I had a vending license. I'm vending cigarettes.
They want to get cigarettes. So I'll put them right in this vending machine.
I had a sign. You got to be 18.
That was nice of you.
Such a jackass. No, I meant more the broadcasting facility I had back in 2005 that I was shut down on.
So you had two businesses shut down on you.
Yeah.
Your cigarette business?
Yeah. Well, I don't want to call it a cigarette business. The problem was it was a complete vending business. The bottom two shelves were cigarettes. Everything else was snacks and all that stuff. The problem was you didn't make enough money on this. It was the cigarettes that made the money.
Yeah.
So I don't remember what I charged. But you're talking, I was 18, 19, I was like 19 years old. So we're going back to the early 90s. I would venture to guess cigarettes were $2.50 a pack. I was probably selling them for $4 as a convenience in the gas station.
Yeah.
And I couldn't keep them stocked. So if you're making, I was probably making $2 a pack because I think I was spending $20 a carton at Costco, or it was it wasn't called Costco at
Sam's
the time.
Club.
No.
Or...
Oh God damn it! What was it called? Oh, whatever it was called before Costco, I don't remember. But it was something. Well, anyway, so it was $20 for a carton, and I was selling them for $4. So I would come in and literally there'd be 15 or 16 packs gone. I just made $32. Yet two bags of potato chips were bought.
Yeah, you're not making anything.
So once the cigarettes came out and I did stock it with more junk, it just wasn't worth my time. And it just didn't work. So I got rid of it.
Hmm.
So they kind of shut me down, yes.
Yeah.
They
kind of. But then the other one, you got shut down because why? They thought you were like a
Because school? I believe I was turned in by, I will not mention the name, but I think a broadcasting school in the area shut me down. I made sure to let, they heard the commercials running, and I believe I was turned into the Board of Education. You know, I specifically never called myself a school. I called it an academy because it was supposed to be more like a club type of deal and like private instruction. And I guess by definition, by strict definition, an academy is classified as a school. So that's how the Board of Ed, I had the cease and desist order on my desk.
You should have been broadcasting consultant, Jerry Recco.
Think about those. Well, I could have. Think about those 3 weeks I had. Opening night, everything stolen. Get everything, literally buy more computers, buy everything, restock the place. 3 weeks later, cease and desist.
Wow.
Thousands of dollars gone. Yeah.
You were trying to be an entrepreneur, Jerry.
You know, I was trying to, they always say if you're going to start a business, try and do something that serves a need. And I really truly believed, and I still do to this day, but the business is changing, that college kids have nowhere to practice. Now you can do a podcast, I suppose. That's not the same as doing live radio. And I really believed what I created was an opportunity for people to walk out of there with real practical live broadcasting experience and something they could put on their resume. And I was right because I think I got about 100 phone calls the first week of advertising. And then I got shut down.
Yeah.
So.
Damn it.
Yeah. Yeah.
You tried, Jerry.
I did try.
All we can do. All we can do is ask you.
It's 20 years ago now.
Yeah. The 20th year anniversary of it.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Jerry, let's do the warm-up show. We did that at 5 a.m., I think.
We did.
And we'll be back here tomorrow on a Thursday.
Right.
For a warm-up show again. See ya!
Podcasting isn't just evolving. It's having a full-blown identity crisis. I'm Allison Marino, host of What's a Podcast? The Revolution Redefined. A new series that pulls back the curtain on the forces shaping the medium now and what that means for all of us who love podcasts. I'm really excited to share the official trailer where you'll hear from some of the biggest names in the space. Ira Glass, Leo Laporte, Guy Raz, Hernan Lopez, Lex Fridman, AJ Feliciano, Dan Granger, and yeah, me too. Here it is now.
I still want to kill the word podcast.
That's not just a hot take. It's a symptom of an identity crisis.
Big company run media, and people are trusting it less and less. It's really important that we're independent.
There's a handful of companies that control the vast majority of podcast inventory that have the vast majority of the gigantic shows.
We left radio behind for a reason. We wanted to get away from all the gatekeepers.
I don't know that you could do this as effectively in video.
Podcasting is at a crossroads. I've watched the industry swing from hype to consolidation to reinvention. But this time it's different. From the producers of the documentary Age of Audio, Oxford Road presents the Media Roundtable special series. What's a podcast? The Revolution Redefined.
All of us who work in the media, like, yeah, we got to run a business and like, we got to make a living and we got to sell our ads and we got to do all that. But we all got into it because like, I think most of us, like, it just gave us a feeling.
A three-part series where you'll hear the leading industry voices give their takes on what podcasting has become and where it's headed next. Teaming up with Oxford Road and Age of Audio director Sean Colone for this series was fun, but also kind of a wake-up call. If you love this medium as much as I do, you've got to listen to What's a Podcast? The Revolution Redefined. It's out now, wherever you get your podcasts.